Kia ora koutou, welcome to the panel on RNZ National. Wendy writes, thanks Michelle, I've been known to be quite productive and motivated. At the moment, my goals are getting up, dressed at normal time, eating properly and doing something small every day, like you. Sweep, drive, tidy something, but grief is prominent. Wishing you all well. Wendy, thank you for that. And a bit of response on interest rates too, so we'll cover that later in the program. Shortly, the publisher of some of the country's best-known magazines has shut its doors today, the likes of The Listener and the New Zealand Women's Weekly. Wendell Nissen with us. And the Director General of Health has confirmed 89 new cases of COVID-19, our biggest increase in one day. Professor Mick Roberts with us to explain. And people with disabilities can't be allowed to fall through the cracks of the COVID-19 crisis. Chris Orr from Blind and Low Vision NZ on the challenges facing them. With us today, writer and author David Slack and speaker and comedian Michelle A. Court on the program. There's been disbelief and widespread grief in the media and wider community today after Bauer Media shut down its New Zealand branch. The closure means the loss of some of the country's longest-running and beloved magazines like The Listener and New Zealand Women's Weekly, as well as Women's Day, North and South, Next, Metro, Home NZ and Your Home and Garden, meaning the loss of 300 jobs. There's been criticism that the magazines were deemed non-essential by the government during the lockdown, but the Bauer teams were still working from home to put out their next publications. Bauer Media Group has confirmed it did not apply for a wage subsidy to keep it going through COVID-19 disruption. The Prime Minister expressed her disappointment at Bauer's decision this afternoon.
No one wanted to see the loss of these magazines. These have all been part of New Zealand's history. They've been part of people's lives. Within a couple of days of the New Zealand government announcing the lockdown, Bauer contacted the minister and told him they weren't interested in subsidies. They didn't enter a conversation about becoming an essential service. They didn't seek to continue to operate in lockdown, and they didn't want to use the government support to keep their doors open. So I just reject any suggestion that COVID-19 and our response to it has caused them to shut their printing press, but I deeply regret that they have. In my view, they should have taken it up and they should have kept going.
Well, it's been rough weeks for the sector. Radio Sport was shut down by NZME, and MediaWorks has asked all of its workers to take a pay cut or face job losses. Well, let's go now to Wendell Nissen, who together with her husband, Paul Little, edited five of the magazines which have been shut down. Wendell, kia ora, welcome to the program.
Kia ora, thanks for having me on.
What do you say? You must be gutted.
You know, I've gone through the shock, sadness, now I'm just angry. You know, it's interesting the Prime Minister saying that about Bauer. Here's the thing. It doesn't matter which way you slice it. Magazines were made non-essential. They could not be sold, all right? And that's the problem. Bauer may have been intending to close down magazines. That's no surprise to anyone that magazines have been struggling. But had they not been made non-essential, we might still have 237 people employed for a couple more weeks. Maybe a couple of months, maybe till the end of the year before Bauer made that decision. So it comes back to that, the fact that you can buy cigarettes in the supermarket, but you can't buy magazines. And I know Bauer was fighting that decision. I know the Magazine Publishers Association was fighting that decision. And even though Jacinda said there, oh, no one, they didn't want to talk about that, because they were fighting it. They thought they would get back into supermarkets. So
right.
That's where it lies. And that whoever made that decision to say magazines are not non-essential, well, that's on their conscience.
Okay, we had quite a discussion about this yesterday on the panel with Bill Rolston, and he was adamant, in a strongly worded sort of, I've been thinking that the likes of The Listener as a beacon of what he thought, well, of course, the Fourth Estate, I'm sure many would agree, should have been an essential service. You agree?
Absolutely. And the good old weekly. I mean, we tend to forget that that's for women. A lot of old women read that. There are women in isolation right now on their own waiting for their weekly. So, you know, it's not all about just the current affairs titles. We are media. We provide information. The government took out ads in those magazines, COVID-19 ads, to get information out. So if they were so non-essential, why would you put ads in something?
How
crazy it is.
Right. I'm just thinking about the Women's Weekly. Actually, take that. I mean, it must have been published even through the Great Depression.
The Depression, the war, It was an essential service for women, teaching them how to vote. I mean, all those basic things. And a lot of current affairs coverage in there, a lot of really good reading, information. It was a valuable asset. I mean, if anyone should be upset in this country, it'll be the 500,000 readers of Women's Day and the 500,000 readers of Women's Weekly, women. We should be the ones that are absolutely shocked and horrified.
What does this mean for the writers, the journalists, the contributors? This is a whole, it's a huge, all of a sudden we wake up and none of these iconic titles are going to be able to be read.
It's, well, for Paul and I are both freelance writers. We've just lost all our work. So, but that's fine. You know, we will survive. We write books as well, which aren't dependent on advertising and have also been made non-essential, by the way. I had a book due to be launched this week, which is stuck in a warehouse. And we are a nation of readers. Why are we not being allowed to read? I don't know. Is this some kind of reading discrimination by the government? I just think that these are icons, especially the Listener, especially the Weekly. They've been around for decades. You've got generations who have read them. And, you know, we can blame Bauer. We can blame the government. It doesn't. The fact is, it's just sad.
Finally, a couple of, before we go to David and Michelle, do you think there'll be a buyer? Is there somebody, someone, some organisation who can step into this giant Bauer's shoes or not?
I hope so. They were making money. So they're not lost leaders, especially the Weekly. They were making money. So, yeah. Someone out there who's got a few million, go and buy them, rehire those staff and get that magazine out there. I think it would be a great idea.
Right, Wendell and Listen, thank you very much for being with us this afternoon on the panel. Well, to David and Michelle, both of who you might have worked at some stage for some of these titles. Michelle, you first. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I've worked for probably almost all of those in the stable at some point. I think it's really telling that that Bauer said when they told staff this morning that they were closing doors and throwing their hands in the air, that they had been looking for buyers but hadn't found them yet, and yet staff knew absolutely nothing about that. So, I mean, I'm a little suspicious that this was a company that wanted to get out of the market and 4 weeks of being non-essential was their cue to step away. So that would be, that's one of my thoughts.
What's your take on that, David? Because the Prime Minister did say today, to quote, in my view, from what I know of the situation, this appears to have been a decision that happened at the same time as COVID-19, not because of it. Do you agree with that or not?
What I think is that what Michelle said about 4 weeks is a very crucial point here. That is not necessarily fatal to a lot of operations, and I'm not sure it was fatal to this one, notwithstanding that they couldn't have the sales in the supermarket. What I was talking about before the news was the idea that many people have had to take a haircut. The whole point is that this is not an ideal arrangement, and it's that scales all the way to not survivable. This parent company is not on its last dollar. It may well be feeling similar difficulties in Germany, I'm not quite sure, but this looks way more like using a pretext for what they were intending to do anyway than finding that this was an insurmountable problem that they couldn't get into the supermarkets. I frankly don't buy it. Now, there's a wider context to this too, and that is that it's not just Bauer where this is falling over. I've gone through this week myself with stuff where I've lost both of the columns I was doing there, and just about all columnists are gone. The Herald NZME have done the same thing, as you said before, Wallace, Radio Sport too. There's convulsion here because everybody knew that all of these operations were a little precarious, and this has, I believe, created an opportunity for people to take some of the moves now that they'd been hesitating to do before. Now it becomes a matter of somewhere between necessity and convenience, and we can't know for sure exactly where that lies, but there's no question that everything is coming unraveled here. Now, when this happened this morning, I looked at it all and I thought, oh, Jesus, because I thought I had a way through this to go on doing what I'm doing. And then I looked at that and thought, well, this is a tidal wave. And
me too,
so I went
me
for,
too.
When the going gets tough, I go running. And by the time I'd finished my run, I had a quite different point of view because it took me back to 1984 and the Rogernomics revolution, and particularly what I saw in the farming community, which I'd come from. And that is that everything that you thought was solid just dissolved.
Right.
And in the end, what you got was a very different proposition. And I'm not saying it was desirable to go through that convulsion, but you do reach a point where there's an inevitability about it that has to be faced. And I think the only regrettable thing is that it all happened in a convulsion in the case of farming in the 80s, and lives were lost.
Just
it was awful.
Just finally, because we've got to move on.
My point is, Wallace, I think at the end of this, assuming we can find a way past the way the big operations like Google and Facebook have sucked all of the advertising money out, there is a new smaller basis for this, for media to operate in the same way that there was a new smaller basis for farming to operate coming through that. And arguably, all of these large lumbering giants have impeded the likes of Newsroom, Spinoff, whatever you like, to flourish, because they carry much less overhead, many fewer expensive
people.
I
just want to ask Michelle a question, and then we're going to move on, because a few people are turning their noses up at the likes of Women's Day or Women's Weekly, but these are an extraordinary staple in households across the country. And really, when you think about it, it is just very, very hard to think about the landscape of New Zealand without your Women's Weekly, without your Metro magazine, or your North and South, or your Listener. I mean, these are really big titles.
Yeah, they are. And people like to sneer at magazines that are targeted at women because women matter less than men. But a lot of women are avid readers. And it is, as Wendell said, it's a lifeline. Also, those other titles, North and South, Metro, those magazines, you know, this is a time when what we need the most is long-form investigative journalism and long-form features. And I suspect it has more to do with the fact that advertisers aren't in a position to sell their soap and cars. And that's what the real problem is here, that the advertising revenue that supports long-form investigative journalism isn't available because people can't sell stuff because we're in a lockdown.
4:19.
And
panel,
if you've got
NZ
an already
National. Got to move on, David, we can come to some of that after the headlines. To this, the Director General of Health has confirmed 89 new cases of COVID-19, bringing the total to 797. 13 people in hospital, 2 in ICU, all stable. 92 people have now recovered from the coronavirus. Only 1% have been classed as community transmission, but 17% are still being contact traced. There are 6 clusters of 10 or more people around the country. But to talk to us about how this disease is tracking thus far, Professor Mick Roberts, Professor in Mathematical Biology at Massey University of Auckland. Professor Roberts, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So, yes, the biggest increase in one day, 89 new cases. How do you read this, Professor Roberts?
I'm still not that concerned. Because we've still got imported cases coming through, a lot of imported cases, although there is some evidence of some small amount of community transmission at the moment. There's a new report out from Imperial College in London, who've got one of the biggest and best modelling groups in the world. They're advising the World Health Organization. And they looked at the lockdown in Europe, in various countries that have introduced lockdown. And you're looking at the reproduction number of the infection. And without any intervention, that appears to be 2 or 3. The lockdown was taking the reproduction number of the intervention down to about 1. Just above or just below 1. So it's not absolutely perfect, even the lockdown. But what it does mean is that each new case would replace itself with just 1 more case. So we should get a plateau. And we should start to see that next week, I would think, start to see the numbers plateauing off. And then if we really hold the lockdown in place, things should slowly go down. But it will be slow.
It'll be slow. Yes. Now, because you also said, Ashley Bloomfield also said that the elimination doesn't mean we will get rid of COVID-19 forever. And we may not be able to all step down to level three at the same time. So some regions will move at different times. So what, we may not be out of the woods for this for a long, long time. This virus or this pandemic will have a long tail.
It will have a long tail. For one thing, because we're eliminating the virus, then people obviously are not getting infected and therefore they're not getting immune. So we're always in danger of imported cases, the odd case that gets through the cracks, starting a small cluster. And without any immunity, the phrase is usually herd immunity. I think that's unfortunate. I prefer community immunity. Herd immunity has got into the vernacular. So without the immunity, we're always going to be at risk of transmission either from overseas or the odd case that turns up in New Zealand. So it will take a long time because it's a long way away that a vaccine comes on the horizon.
Do we know, can I ask Professor Roberts, do we know for sure that once you have contracted COVID-19 and recovered from it, that you have immunity?
We don't know for sure. For most viruses, that would be the case, unless they mutate quickly. Now, I'm a mathematician, I'm not a virologist, but I have been told that this virus doesn't appear to mutate very quickly.
Right.
I think they know about two variants of it at the moment. So it's a good bet. You could say that someone who's had SARS and recovered might have some immunity towards COVID-19, but that's a very small group of people, of course.
So. Professor Mick Roberts, Professor in Mathematical Biology from Massey University, Auckland, thank you very much for being on the program with us. Now to this, and it was sort of one of the issues was brought up by David Slack in his I've Been Thinking segment. We're going to go to that after. We're going to be talking about interest rates with David Wilson. But to this first, and it's about jobs. We heard about the media sector, but the construction sector is calling for its own COVID-19 alert level. Such is the economic battering that sector is facing also. It's been estimated that up to a third of construction jobs were already at risk, and unless steps were taken fast, the sector will be in critical condition. To explain how this vital sector is faring, with me is Warwick Quinn, the Chief Executive of the Building and Construction Industry Training Organisation. Warwick, kia ora, welcome to the program.
Kia ora, thank you for having me.
Give us a bit of a picture. How bad is it out there in construction?
Construction relies heavily on cash flow. You know, it's a large ticket item and investment in a building. And as most firms don't have, you know, huge amounts of capital, they rely significantly on cash flow coming from their contracted, you know, person they contracted to pay the bills because, you know, most of the money going across their desk isn't theirs. It needs to be passed on to subbies and to suppliers and others before they take a bit themselves. So with large contracts that are currently on hold, that cash flow was absolutely vital, like any business really, but to keep their ability to go back to work with their staff, etc., when the lockdown's lifted.
And I suppose it's fair to say that even prior to the pandemic, Warwick, this sector was also, well, it's already facing a lot of issues, wasn't it? There was a lot in the media about this, and it did revolve even then around cash flow, also timeline issues of projects being finished.
Well, it's a whole raft of things. Mm. It's quite a fragile sector. It, you know, for very large contracts and the sorts of investments people make, it runs on very low margins. And as a result of that, you know, any delays or any changes to a construction project that were unforeseen have a significant effect. And therefore, you know, anything like this that comes along just adds further complications to what the construction sector is already facing.
So what you're going to have is you're going to have a lot, I think someone mentioned that you're going to have a lot of half-finished building sites around the country sitting there exposed to the elements. They need to be finished.
Correct. So what's likely to happen is, depending on how the response is lifted, you know, it might go from level 4 to level 3, for example, before construction firms can get back on site. The first thing they will do is, you know, fix any damage, secure the site and carry on and finish that contract. But what we're starting to hear is that in some respects, because of the lack of economic confidence by purchasers, some of the contracts that were out in the future are being cancelled or postponed. Simply because of the fortunes of their own businesses or, you know, the homeowner, for example, in the residential space, isn't as confident as they were prior to this event. So it might take some time for that confidence to, you know, to return. So it's the holes that appear further on down the track that are going to create right. The biggest concern.
Warwick Quinn there, building and construction spokesperson. David, a third of construction jobs, that's a lot of jobs. It's a lot of families, isn't it?
I'll say when this was announced, I was looking out the window at the new high rise in downtown Auckland, and knowing that that's already been a financial disaster for Fletcher Building, and as well as that, they've got the casino and everything that's going wrong. I was thinking how they must be wondering what the hell is coming next. It's really difficult, and. Clearly, if you don't have the cash flow, everything falls apart.
You need that pipeline of cash flow, Michelle.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the parallels with my own tiny little sector, which is not Fletcher's, obviously. But the idea that we might come out of lockdown in 3 weeks' time, but all the work that people like me have had booked has vanished. And how soon do you get that back up and running again? And I realise that the building sector is a huge part of our economy and probably matters more than stand-up comedy shows, but I understand what he's talking about.
And you also wonder about whether it's going to be 3 weeks, you know?
Of course. And you know, I also wonder how our behaviour will have changed as a people when we come out of this. You know, are we going to, what Warwick was saying, I'm wondering if people are going to go out in large groups to see things that make them laugh. And he's wondering if people are going to have the business confidence to go ahead with that building project. So, yeah.
Bit of a response.
Wallace, it was really nice when you were talking about buildings being left out, exposed to the elements, but you accidentally said elephants, and it was one of the most delightful things I've heard all day.
Did I? Yes, people have been...
You did, it was gorgeous.
Elephants? Gosh, what a Freudian slip. Well, because people have been loving the fact that Robert Kelly said nasturtiums, casting nasturtiums, and I'm being exposed to the elephants. We're all doing it this afternoon, aren't we? Wonderful stuff.
I love it.
A bit of feedback here. I love my listener and will miss it. However, the government can't fix everything. Hopefully some of these will be rescued privately. Be reasonable. If people want to retain jobs, they need to support their employers so the company will survive and thus employ staff. Take holidays now, etc. We all need to do our bit. That's Angela's point of view. Much to come on the panel, including David Wilson from Cities and Regions NZ. He said more could be done to help businesses and banks have a role to play. So he argues, what about a real mortgage holiday? I'm with David Slack and Michelle Acourt on the panel. It's Kaiman Curtis.